The great Dr. Kazmian is here. As I mentioned, sir, I talked behind your back and said how impeccable, how immaculate you are, and how many times we've done this together in the past. Dr. Kazmian is to be held harmless. I use that term precisely because he was attempting to get through. He could not get through. So there was a problem with the phone line. So it is my pleasure, and you talk about a great friend, because obviously, I mean, his time, 30 minutes of his time, and we schedule these things way in advance, is very significant. So we just got Dr. Kazmian. He was able to finally get through. I didn't realize that he was having a problem getting through, but I knew there was something, unique happening. I said, do you want to reschedule? Or he said, no, let's do it now. So Dr. Kazmian, I'll do a brief introduction because I did the full introduction just a little bit. Dr. Pedram Kazmian, who's been with us, we've done a number of great interviews together, is a very talented electrophysiologist and is board certified in both cardiovascular disease and clinical cardiac electrophysiology. And Dr. Kazmian, I mentioned all of your credentials and universities and everything and your special interests in atrial fibrillation, heart failure, and ablations for ventricle tachycardia, and all the different clinical research projects and articles that you've done in peer-reviewed medical journals. Also, Dr. Kazmian has a leadership title as the Director EPS Fellowship Program at DeBoer Heart and Lung Center. We have a very important topic this half hour, and it is understanding heart rhythm disorders. So sorry that you could not get through, sir. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to welcome you back. And our first question on the topic, what are heart rhythm disorders and arrhythmias?
Yeah, so the heart is its own electrical system, essentially, with the natural pacemaker. We call it sinus node. It's in the upper chamber of the heart that generates and coordinates each heartbeat in sort of organized fashion. So this electricity starts from the top chamber, works its way down to the bottom chambers of the heart to create sort of effective, efficient contraction. Arrhythmias occur when this system is disruptive in one way or another, leading to heartbeats that are either too fast or too slow or irregular. And that can have clinical impacts ranging from sort of a mundane, which will be extra beats, to even extreme form of life-threatening arrhythmias like ventricular tachycardias may need treatment.
Again, we are visiting with Dr. Kazmian. The topic is understanding heart rhythm disorders. And typically, and we do float a little bit if need be, but almost 95%+ of the time, DeBoer Heart and Lung Center presents on the second Thursday of every month from 9:05 to 9:35 a.m. And we visit with great doctors like Dr. Kazmian and important topics like today's understanding heart rhythm disorders. What are the different types of arrhythmias, doctor?
Right. So arrhythmias are generally classified based on where they originate and how they affect the heart rate. Some are, we call them tachyarrhythmias, which means fast heart rates or rhythms, such as SVTs is one category, or bradyarrhythmias, which are a slow heart rate. And that could be because of the problem with the natural pacemaker of the heart or the wiring that conducts the electricity in the heart. And sometimes we have irregular heart rate that could be fast or slow, such as atrial fibrillation, which we're going to hopefully talk about. This is most common arrhythmia in man. And as I mentioned, ventricular arrhythmia come from the bottom chamber of the heart. Those are often dangerous and require urgent treatment.
Again, if you're just joining the program, it's Dr. Kazmian, cardiac electrophysiologist at DeBoer Heart Lung Center. If you would like to make an appointment, I'm going to give you two ways, very easy to navigate. If you prefer to use a phone number and speak with someone, that's fine. 609-621-2080. As they say in the business, operators are standing by. 609-621-2080 or any digital device on the web at demand.com. deborah.org. Dr. Kasmian is discussing understanding heart rhythm disorders. What causes a heart rhythm disorder? I'll throw out lifestyle, genetics, aging, take a number, all the above. Your thoughts?
Great. Well, in most cases, arrhythmias are caused by a combination of factors. It's not just one of them. And sometimes we actually don't know exact mechanism. But aging play a major role. You know, as the heart's electrical system degenerates over time, the wear and tear, if you wish. Lifestyle factors like alcohol intake, caffeine, stress, untreated sleep apnea can trigger or worsen arrhythmias. A structural heart disease or prior heart attack, valve diseases can also contribute to it. Genetics can be important, particularly in younger patients with inherited arrhythmia disorders. That's a small portion. In addition, we also have environmental causes. There's certain infections, like in New Jersey, for example, where we have problem with the tick and Lyme disease. Sometimes Lyme disease affects the conduction system of the heart and causes bradyarrhythmias with a slow heart rate. And in occasional cases, you may have what we call iatrogenic causes. So patients who have a surgery, cardiac surgery, and inevitably, as part of the surgery, the conduction system is disrupted, and we may need to address it afterward.
Dr. Kasmian, I think this would be helpful for your listeners. What are the symptoms? Are there symptoms of a heart rhythm disorder? And could someone right now be listening, have an arrhythmia, and not have any symptoms at all?
Absolutely. So symptoms of arrhythmia can vary significantly. It may include things like palpitations, so feeling the heart is fluttering or racing. Could be fatigue, shortness of breath, dizziness, and extreme cases, maybe even fainting. But one of the most important points is that many of these arrhythmias, like atrial fibrillation, for example, can also be completely silent, and you can't 100% rely on the symptoms. In fact, a study suggests that approximately 30 to 40% of patients with AFib have minimal or no symptoms at all, but some other percentages are symptomatic, obviously. And this variability is clinically important because even the asymptomatic patients can still have significant risk, be exposed to significant risk, such as a stroke. So this is why detection and appropriate management are critical.
You are listening to cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Pedram Kasmian from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. The topic is understanding heart rhythm disorders. You mentioned palpitations. Can palpitations, some folks with palpitations, it can be nothing really, you know, to worry about. Mm-hmm. And with some people, palpitations could be something to worry about. Is that fair?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, the gamut goes from the essentially mild rhythm disorders such as extra beats, rare extra beats from the top chamber or bottom chamber that may cause palpitation, to obviously extreme cases, somewhat life-threatening, such as ventricular tachycardia, which originates from the bottom of chamber. Both of them may cause palpitation. But interesting, as I mentioned, palpitation is a subjective feeling and sometimes does not correlate exactly with the level or degree of the objective finding. So a person might have 1% PVC burden, which is those are extra beats, and may be extremely symptomatic, and another person may have 30%, 40% extra beats and not be symptomatic. So we can't rely completely on the palpitation, but palpitation is usually one of the things that bring the patient to our attention.
And palpitations, doctor, can come and go, right? You could have them and then not have them for a long while and have them again, right?
Absolutely.
How is an arrhythmia diagnosed?
Very good question. So diagnosis often begins with something very simple. So checking a pulse. The patient checks the pulse or goes see the primary, they check the pulse, or a nurse checks the pulse. And that prompts us to see why, for example, the heart rate is fast, is slow, or irregular. Patients themselves may notice an irregularity in the pulse or may be detected, you know, during a routine physical exam by a nurse and physician, I mentioned. from there, then we confirm the diagnosis usually with what we call electrocardiogram or ECG, which records the heart's electrical activity. They put patches on the skin, and that gives us the exact rhythm of the heart for that patient. Because many arrhythmias are intermittent, we often need to use longer-term monitoring tools. We call them Holter monitor, for example, event monitors. Or nowadays, people are wearing smartwatches, like wearable devices, that may be able to catch that episode when it occurs. In cases that are where symptoms are infrequent, we may even go one step further and implant a device that monitors the heart for, say, 2 years or 3 years. Those are called loop recorders. The very minor procedure that, in fact, can be done in the office. As I mentioned, these loop recorders monitor their heart rhythm continuously over months to years to be able to capture those sort of elusive arrhythmias where we can't detect them when they come to the office.
So important, that that narrative. We're going to be right back. We only take one time out during Deborah Heart and Lung Center, Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. And today, Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Pedram Kazmian, cardiac electrophysiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. The topic is understanding heart rhythm disorders. And when we come back, the question on the floor for Dr. Kazmian is, AFib is the most common arrhythmia and can lead to an increased risk of stroke. How is stroke risk managed for people with AFib? That is the question when we come back with Dr. Kazmian, visiting on the Hurley in the Morning program right after this. And I trust Dr. Kazmian, who is visiting with us this half hour and been very flexible because we delayed him. He did not delay us. Dr. Pedram Kazmian is a cardiac electrophysiologist, a talented one at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. You can schedule an appointment by calling 609-621-2080 or on the web at demanddeborah.org. The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is understanding heart rhythm disorders. And the question that's on the floor right before we left for our break is as follows. AFib is the most common arrhythmia, and I've learned that from Dr. Kazmian in past interviews. And it can lead to an increased risk of stroke, which Dr. K also has taught us about. And how is stroke risk managed for people with AFib, Dr. Kazmian?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So atrial fibrillation is the most common arrhythmia we see. And unfortunately, it is strongly associated with an increased risk of a stroke. So management of that focuses first on assessing the risk of a stroke. And we have validated the scoring system. It's called CHAS-VASc score, which is acronym for different comorbidities such as heart hypertension, heart failure, diabetes, and other things. For patients are at moderate or high risk according to that scoring system, the cornerstone of therapy is really anticoagulation with blood thinners. This can reduce the risk of a stroke. It doesn't eliminate it. It reduces by about 80-85%, which is very good. For patients who are not good candidates for the long-term anticoagulation because, for example, they have a tendency to bleed, we fortunately now have alternatives called left atrial appendage closure devices. These are same-day procedures that we perform, and then that protects them against the risk of a stroke without them needing to take additional blood thinner. In stroke prevention, obviously, we have to address the symptoms that come with the atrial fibrillation. And we have the two main branches in terms of the approach to treatment. One is the rate management, make sure the heart rate is controlled. And the other is the rhythm management using what's called ablation, which we have newer technologies, much faster, usually the same day discharge. And that gives up to 80-85% success rate in terms of preventing recurrence of atrial fibrillation.
Dr. Kazmian, to manage heart rhythm disorders, what are the medications and procedures that are available?
Another great question. So treatment of arrhythmia, it has to be individualized. but generally falls into a few main categories. We have what's called the rate control drugs, such as beta blocker, calcium channel blocker, which helps slow the heart rate in people who have fast heart rate. Then we have antiarrhythmic medication, which aims to maintain a normal heart rhythm. In patients with atrial fibrillation and other high-risk conditions, anticoagulation is also important, which I discussed just before this. Beyond this medication, we also have a range of procedures that I alluded to, including cardioversion. Again, day procedure, it restores the rhythm back to normal in many of these arrhythmias that are permanent or persistent. Catheter ablation, and in certain cases, device therapy. So we have pacemakers and defibrillators that the overall goal is not only to control the rhythm, but also to improve symptoms and reduce the long-term risk in case of the anticoagulation, as I mentioned.
Dr. Kazmian, a moment ago, you mentioned ablation. Ablation procedures relative to heart rhythm disorders. What is that and how does it work?
Good. So the ablation procedure is something that we've been going through many changes and advancement over the past few years. Catheter ablation is a minimally invasive procedure that allows us to treat arrhythmias at their source, meaning the heart. So through a small puncture typically in the leg, we advance these thin catheters into the heart and use advanced mapping system to identify areas that are responsible for this electrical abnormality. Once we identify those areas, then we treat them using different sources of energy, which traditionally used to be radio frequency, heat, some people refer to freezing, which was cryoablation. And now we have pulse field ablation, which is sort of the new kid in the block. For some tachyarrhythmias, especially atrial fibrillation and SVTs, ablation can be very highly effective, in some cases curative, reducing or even eliminating the need for long-term medication used to control the rhythm.
What would you say when people hear the different terms, catheter and now the pulsed field ablation, what are the benefits of that technology?
Right. So pulsed field ablation, which is the newer technology, been available for almost a year now in North America, and we have access to that, is an exciting new technology that differs fundamentally from the traditional ablation method. Instead of using heat or freezing, it delivers short bursts of a high-energy electrical field that takes out those abnormal cells that cause the arrhythmia. Without creating heat. What makes this approach unique is it's very selective. It preferentially affects the cardiac cells, but it spares the adjacent organs in the chest that we don't want to affect, like esophagus or food pipe, the phrenic nerve that runs around the heart and other blood vessels. This tissue selectivity is a major advantage. That's why experts believe pulse field is a safer and potentially a superior approach. The procedure time is drastically reduced. You know, AFib ablation used to, you know, back in early 2000, 20 years ago, used to take 6 hours, 5 hours. Now it's done 1 hour, and the patient, actually most of them, go home the same day. So drastically improve in terms of efficiency and safety.
It's just flown by. We're to the last question, but I also want to give Dr. Kazmian a closing comment of any kind on today's topic. We have been doing, I'm only doing this brief history preamble because we have been doing the television and radio Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents together for 35 years this July. 35 years. I remember pacemakers, and we would show them on the television program, talk about them in Theater of the Mind on the radio edition of Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, and be able to show the size, and it used to protrude like you could see it, actually, maybe if somebody had like a T-shirt on or something. It's unbelievable. They're so small now, and they just keep getting smaller and smaller. Now they're leadless, so there's no leads anymore. What are the benefits of these next generation devices that help to treat heart rhythm disorders, the pacemakers?
Right. So pacemakers, as you mentioned, been around for a long time. The first implantable pacemaker came out in 1960. So then you can calculate how many years it is. And obviously, the technology has improved drastically.
But by the way, Dr. Kazmian, remind everybody, back then, and even for, I think, decades that would follow, it would look like the size of a pack of cigarettes, and it would it would protrude noticeably at the skin level.
Absolutely. And both the battery technologies improved, the lead technology improved over years. So even now, the leaded pacemakers are significantly smaller than the, you know, the prototype in 1960. But the one step further is actually now we have pacemakers that don't even require lead, and you don't see them from outside because they're not under the skin. They're the size of a almost a bullet, about an inch in length, and they put directly inside the heart. They don't have any wires to connect the device. The device itself is the wire, and the, it has the circuitry and the battery in it. There are many benefits to this. So having a lead can sometimes be the source of complications, such as infection. They can fracture over time. You can imagine these leads are bending hundreds of thousands of times per day.
Yeah.
And they can cause obstruction in the veins where they go through. But the leadless pacemaker, because they don't have a lead, they are a major advancement. So they're much smaller. They're self-contained units that are implanted directly in the heart through a catheter, eliminating the need for leads and surgical pocket, and significantly reduces the risk of infection. In fact, it's extremely rare for these devices to ever get infected, and they quick recover. So in addition, the cardiac devices are becoming more sophisticated. They're smaller. The battery longevity is increasing. So this, some of these leadless devices have battery longevity of 20 years plus.
My goodness. Wow.
And then offer programmability and remote monitoring. And many devices can now transmit data wirelessly. So we get information essentially every night. If there is, if they detect any abnormal rhythm, it immediately automatically sent to us, and then we contact the patient if needed, so we can detect potential issues early without even requiring an office visit. Some of these innovation essentially transform this device therapies, and I think this is one of the exciting areas in electrophysiology, the pacing and the defibrillators.
Remarkable to listen to this. The future is now. That is an amazing narrative that you just shared. To make an appointment at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, 609-621-2080, or on the web at demanddeborah.org. Dr. Kazmian, closing comment on understanding heart rhythm disorders.
First of all, thank you for allowing me to talk to your audience about the electrophysiology. So heart rhythm abnormalities are very common, and sometimes they're associated with symptoms and sometimes are not. Some are more of a nuisance, but some could be life-threatening. So if a patient experiences symptoms of palpitation, dizziness, fainting, any of these symptoms, or if they notice abnormal rate, especially nowadays, many of your audience, I'm sure, using smart wearables that have the capability of recording the heart rate and rhythm. I want them to be mindful of potential risks of these things and make sure they seek medical attention so we can diagnose this and, if needed, treat them.
So great to present you today. Look forward to next time. And again, thanks for your flexibility today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate you. Right back, Dr. Kazmian. And you can call in. We're going to step aside for a few minutes. You can join us next at 609-407-1450 with Dr. Kazmian, who leaves us now. I am Hurley in the Morning.